And a great big polar vortex, Arizona. Good morning to you all on this Saturday morning. Thank you for tuning in to Rosie on the House, an Arizona Saturday morning tradition. We're here with the entire team like we are every Saturday morning to do one thing, to become you, the Arizona homeowner's best friend. And we're going to do that by educating you, entertaining you, and protecting you from making any mistakes about anything on any topic or any project around your house, home, castle, or cabin. And we always start every Saturday morning in the garden. My co-host, Romy Romero, this is your hour, my friend.
Well, and we're talking trees this month. We do it monthly with Integrity Tree Service. Mr. John Eisenhower comes down, and he always brings a guest with him, and they bring talking points for the month as it relates to trees, and they also bring a tree of the month. Mr. Eisenhower, welcome back.
It's great to be here as we talk about November tree pruning stuff. We just have such a good lineup of material to talk about today. I am really delighted to have the opportunity for Stephen Price, Integrity Tree Services Office, Operations Manager, in studio with us today. Stephen is a certified arborist, an Arizona certified landscape professional. He's a certified tree risk assessor, a Smartscape certified, what do you call that? You're Smartscape certified with AMWA.
Correct. Through the University of Arizona, puts on a great program.
Steve is also a certified tree care safety professional, and I'm just delighted because Steve has brought such a nice level of expertise and professionalism to our company, and does sales for us, and he's in studio today to talk to us a little bit about his favorite tree, and also just to help to fill out some of the bring some good expertise to some of the questions we have.
If you'd like to join the conversation, have a tree question, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. We have a host of arborist knowledge in the studio with us this morning. So whether it relates to citrus or natural desert trees, or we've even got some emails we're going to get into later as it relates to high mountain trees, it's 1-888-767-4348. Stephen, we met a little over a year ago. You had just started with Integrity Tree Service at the Arizona Community Tree Council's annual conference in Prescott. Let me ask you, when you were filling out a resume, when you were interviewing with Integrity Tree Service, was radio broadcasting part of your job description?
No, it was not.
So I got. Are you getting time and a half for this? Is this overtime, or did John come around on Friday? Yeah, I'm gonna need you to go ahead and come into work tomorrow.
He did. He twisted my arm. It's a privilege to be here. This is great, and I love the show. So, like I said, it's just happy to be here and share some knowledge.
What do we need to know as it relates to pruning trees in Arizona in November?
Well, you know, we always tell people that you can prune trees probably more in more months of the year in Arizona than pretty much anywhere else, because we have a almost year-round growing season. But there are some limits. We discourage people from pruning too much. We've talked a lot about the concept of pruning dosage. You know, as the temperatures start to cool into the winter, and as they start to get really high at the peak of the summer, you want to start reducing the pruning dosage. So you're not going to be removing quite as much of the foliage from the tree during the winter months. Of course, when we get into December and January, we're starting to get into the deciduous tree pruning season. So all the trees that lose their leaves during the winter can be pruned in December and January. With your evergreen trees, you want to be a little more conservative.
And name a couple.
Well, you've got your mulberries, you have your Chinese elms, your ash trees, your crepe myrtles, a beautiful smaller tree. All these trees lose their leaves in the winter, and it'd be a good time to get on the schedule to get those pruned in December and January.
And you're not looking to do a super heavy pruning here?
Well, it just depends, you know, on some of your larger trees like your elms and your ash. If you do need to do some containment pruning, a little bit more aggressive pruning, you want to be sure you do it in the winter. Again, all those trees can be pruned at other times of the year, but you want to be a little more conservative and try to target your heavier pruning of your deciduous trees right now.
Now, a lot of people will rake up the leaves, bag them, put them out at the street, put them in the garbage bin. You're a big proponent of just leaving them alone.
Well, if it would be ideal if we could leave a lot of the leaf litter under our trees, because it is encouraging nitrogen cycling. That is the normal cycle where the leaves decompose under the trees, and they provide a little insulation from the sun. From they limit the evapotranspiration of water, excuse me, in the soil, and they also are improving the soil microbiology. They're actually providing like an insulation layer on the surface of the soil, which helps the soil beneath to become be healthier. Unfortunately, we blow all of our leaves into a pile, rake them up, and take them to the landfill. Not only is it expensive, but it's sort of breaking up that natural nitrogen cycling, which we encourage. We understand that you can't leave leaf litter all over the yard, though. That's a pretty tough thing to do in most of our landscapes. But there's an option that you can take those leaves, instead of raking them up, bagging them, and throwing them away, is take them and put them in an appropriate place in your yard and start a compost pile. We really encourage people to do that. It's not difficult. You can make it as sophisticated as you want. You can build compost bins and actually a place where you can deposit them and start working with them through the compost process. But even putting a simple pile up in the back corner of the yard and start throwing them in. Compost happens, as they say. You don't have to do a lot. You know, if you add a little bit of water to the compost pile, that is necessary to kind of facilitate the composting process. Can we talk a little bit? I'll talk a little bit about the recipe. You want to be sure you have equal parts of green material and brown material. You need to have the nitrogen, the green material, and the carbon, the dry material. When you have a nice blend and a mix of those two, add a little bit of water, and you've got a recipe for a great composting process. For composting to truly happen, for the breakdown of those materials, you have to reach 160 degrees inside the compost pile. And those of you who composted before have discovered when your compost is working well, you can stick your hand into the compost pile and it's actually hot. It's burning and it's doing what it does. And as a compost pile begins to burn, it starts to shrink in size. And then you can add more materials, or you can take that finished compost and move it to a separate area or a separate compost bin and let it completely compost. Because if you add more material to it the next week, then you're going to have to continue to compost that to its completion. Usually it takes about 90 days of composting for you to have a nice finished product. So there's different ways of going about it, but we'd love to encourage it. The byproduct is you have this gold, this beautiful brown, black gold earth at the end of the day, and you can use that to put back into your landscape, either incorporate it into the soil around your plants or put it on as a top dressing. Yes.
And in that method, it wouldn't blow away like the leaves would.
Right, right.
Now, you said 90 days for compost time. Now, that's if you're just using plant material. If you have chickens and you're adding droppings, if you've got livestock and you're adding droppings, when you're adding
manure,
that's a whole... That extends it quite a bit.
That's the nitrogen component, and it's going to be going to make a hotter compost mix. Yes.
For years, Jennifer and I would just throw our table scraps in the compost bin. It was always kind of a slimy, gooey mess back there. And then someone advised me, Rosie, you've got this paper shredder right here. Throw the shreds in there. Once I started adding the shredded documents, about every 6 or 8 inches of table scraps, it changed our compost completely. We have the richest, darkest, you called it black gold. I would put my compost up. I don't know content-wise if it's correct, but it looks beautiful. And it just took someone else said, yeah, throw a layer of one or two sheets of newspaper down every couple days and then keep throwing your table scraps on top of that.
Yeah, if you have it too green, it starts to get slimy and can get a little foul and sour smelling. And on the other hand, if it's too dry and you have too much carbon material, too many of the dried leaves and not enough green material, then it will never break down. It will never start composting. So you have to have that nice balance.
My sister, the queen of composting in the Ozarks in Missouri, says a proper compost pile will not attract flies, will not attract roaches or bugs.
Will not smell.
And will not smell. And that's when you know you've got just about the right combination.
Beautiful.
And it doesn't happen by accident. It takes a little bit of time, a little bit of learning, and a little bit of education.
And I would encourage people to start small. And I'm seeing a lot more of our clients with these little compost machines.
Yeah,
you can order online. They can look online. They can find a small one. Start small. Start working at it and working towards that right mix that John's talking about. And even myself, it's something I want to do a little bit more.
Well, it's a shame to have to go spend a little bit of money to buy a couple cubic feet of compost at the hardware store when you can make your own. You're throwing your trimmings away and then going down to the hardware store and buying it.
Now, let's get into our tree of the month. Stephen, go ahead. Yeah, I understand this is your personal favorite tree.
Definitely one of my favorite trees of all time. I almost remember in slow motion the first day I fell in love with this tree. It was over in Queen Creek. I was driving through this property, it sat in some trees, and I just had to stop the car. I looked over, and I've always been partial to blondes. My wife is a beautiful blonde. And this tree has the most beautiful, white, chalky, creamy, smooth bark. And I thought, wow. And I had to get out. I went up to the tree. I'm touching it. And pretty soon this car stops and this lady rolls down the window and says, "This is a school area. I'm going to call the police."
So it was a tree. This wasn't your
future
wife.
It was a tree, yeah. And so, okay. So I started doing some research and come to find out it's a Eucalyptus papuana. It's a ghost gum, and they're just absolutely majestic trees. What I like about them is they don't get too large for the landscape. They're great for even a lot of times you'll find them in the streets. ADOT is using them on the freeways. They get about 40 feet tall and 25 feet wide on average. They look pretty much like a eucalyptus, not quite as littersome as some of the eucalyptus. And another reason why they're used on the freeways and in different locations.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you.